From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The synthetic opioid fentanyl is 50 to 100 times more powerful than the painkiller morphine. Fentanyl has overtaken heroin and cocaine as the driving force behind the epidemic of deaths from opioid overdoses, but not because drug users seek it out. Often, users are unaware that fentanyl, or an even stronger tranquilizer for large animals called carfentanil, has been added to the drugs they buy. Some say knowing fentanyl is present would change how they use drugs. Today, the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and Brown University are unveiling new research about a low-cost, simple test strip to detect fentanyl. One of the researchers, Dr. Susan Sherman, co-leader of the Addiction and Overdose Workgroup of the Bloomberg American Health Initiative, joins us on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. In the first 9 months of last year, 1,700 Marylanders died from accidental overdoses on drugs and alcohol. The vast majority were caused by opioids. Nearly 7 out of 10 deaths involved the powerful synthetic opioid fentanyl, which is as much as 50 times stronger than heroin. Half of those deaths occurred in Baltimore City and County. One of the dangers of using drugs is the unknown. Users don't know what the drug contains, nor the reliability of the dealer they bought it from. Some believe this danger discourages drug use. Others believe it entices users who may be chasing the next high. Joining us is Susan Sherman, a professor in the Department of Health, Behavior, and Society at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. She was lead author last year of an Able Foundation report on safe consumption spaces, places that offer medical supervision for those using drugs. Now Susan Sherman has written with Tracy Gree of Brown University a report for Hopkins that looks at ways to prevent overdoses on fentanyl. The method? Easy access to technology that tests drugs and tells users what they contain. Susan Sherman, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming in. Why is fentanyl so fatal?
Well, it's 50 to 100 times more potent than morphine. It's a synthetic opioid that has a much higher concentration of potency. And so it's lethal because people who use it unknowingly or potentially knowingly, if not used correctly, it can be fatal because their body doesn't have a tolerance for it. Their body's not expecting that to come, and it kind of overwhelms your receptors, your brain receptors, and puts you into respiratory failure, which can happen with heroin, but much more likely to happen with things like fentanyl and its analogs.
Yeah, I mean, it seems we hear about it, fentanyl being more resistant to naloxone, the reversal drug. It seems like it resists it more.
You just need a higher dose. So if you have a single dose of naloxone, and this is kind of a part of the message that needs to be gotten out to people who use drugs, and a lot of people who use drugs know, of course, because they're the experts in this. It must be remembered. I get to study it, but people who use them daily know lots of things about, except they don't know everything that's in their drugs. But they know that it's important to have 3 to 4 doses potentially on hand to
actually, of naloxone. What is fentanyl legally used for?
Fentanyl is legally used for, it's has been created to for pain medication in the hospital. When people have cancer or are on chemotherapy or people have had operations, a lot of people, they're fentanyl patches, they're fentanyl lozenges. So it's not that fentanyl that's usually in the illicit drug market. It's fentanyl that's largely produced from China, and also fentanyl that can be bought on the black web, so the dark web. So that's what's getting out, fentanyl that's kind of being created for the purposes of this illegal market, not from hospitals, but that's what it was originally created for.
And what is the form that people are getting it?
In a powder. So it's in a powder. The reason that there's such higher overdose rates on the East Coast than the West Coast and higher rates attributed to fentanyl is that On the East Coast, there's powdered heroin, and on the West Coast, there's black tar heroin. Now, fentanyl has been found in other substances, in cocaine, in fake pills, but primarily we know it is coming in a powder form with heroin, without heroin, with other adulterants that people make a solution to inject.
The study,
or snort.
This study that you co-authored that was published today with the acronym FORECAST, Fentanyl Overdose Reduction Checking Analysis Study, looked at methods of drug checking. What is drug checking?
Drug checking is something that's been used in public health surveillance systems in Europe and as a service to public health service. It's a way to test what is actually in a drug. As we know, the illicit drug mart regulated and unregulated these kinds of testing technologies. So they're not just used for the illegal drug market. They have multiple purposes. In the U.S., drug checking was used kind of most widely during when ecstasy and party drugs were out, and there was a group called Dance Safe that would test drugs at raves so people would know what was in their ecstasy tablets. Also be able to have a moment to talk to people, make sure you drink water, make sure you ingest potassium through bananas, for example. So those are kind of harm reduction techniques that can be shared in the moment that drugs are being checked. It's also used in law enforcement settings. So one of the technologies we tested is something that's commonly used in testing drugs for the purposes of arresting people who are distributing, et cetera. So these are things that have been used for a number of years and just is starting to be used in the form of strips in New York and California, Massachusetts, to be handed out at places like syringe services programs, syringe exchanges, for people to be able to test in their urine or in a solution, like a tiny bit of the drugs in water, to see if fentanyl is present, and then they can make informed decisions about what they do next.
So I want to get back to the strips and where they might be available. Describe the methods that your study looked at. You looked at three different methods. A machine that subjects a sample to molecular vibrations. That machine is called TrueNARC. A machine that screens drugs via infrared light, called the Bruker Alpha.
Right.
And the test strips. And the test strip seems like people could use it in the field and it would be easy to understand. What about the other two methods?
Right. So thanks. I just want to say we were funded by the Bloomberg American Health Initiative. So this is nothing. We have no vested skin in the game for any of these companies. And I think it's important to say that. And also the report that came out was peer reviewed by 7 experts in the field. This is yet to be in a journal, but we released this through the Bloomberg American Health Initiative in advance of a meeting that's happening here tomorrow, because it's such important information, we wanted to talk about it. So with that caveat, we tested 3 methods, and what we tested was sensitivity. So that is, if in fact fentanyl is in the drug, what's the percentage of times that it's detected? Specificity, if fentanyl's not in the drug, how easy is it to detect? Do these methodologies test that there's no fentanyl present? And third is the limit of detection. So how little of an amount do you need to actually detect that fentanyl is present? And the strips were the highest sensitivity and the highest specificity. We tested these in 2 labs, the Baltimore City Police Lab and the Rhode Island Crime Lab, because the study took place in Baltimore, Providence, and Boston. And we also found that the strips detected the lowest amount, a minuscule amount of fentanyl. Machine that was really useful street market samples were tested. So that means they weren't the purest samples necessarily. In Baltimore, there are 2 types of heroin that are used. One is raw, so it has a higher purity. It's more expensive. And one is something called scramble, which is mixed with quinine and other substances. And people know what they're buying because of the price, and also because people know what the drug feels like. So we found that the strips in Baltimore and in Rhode Island had the highest sensitivity and specificity, and the lowest level could be detected. The Bruker also fared very well with these street samples, and that looks at the spectrum of drugs that are in a sample. So the fentanyl strip is yes, no. It's like a pregnancy test. It takes about 3 to 4 minutes to see that if it's positive, whereas the Bruker is 30 to 60 seconds, and it can tell you the proportion of the drug, like what percentage is present. It's a much more expensive machine. It's about the size of a cash register, but that type of machine could be used in a fixed site where someone who is trained to see what's in drugs, not just fentanyl, but other drugs. And the uniqueness about the Bruker is that you actually can create a library of substances that's tailored to a local drug scene, if that makes sense. And the third technology is called TruNarc, which takes about 4 minutes to see, and it had lower sensitivity and specificity. It's much better with a purer because it only can detect the top two substances. The purer form of the substance, the better it does. So in a street setting, it doesn't fare as well, if that makes sense.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Hopkins Professor Susan Sherman, co-author of a new study on methods to screen drugs for fentanyl and inform drug users about what they are ingesting. What kind of cost are we talking about? Is one of these methods a lot more cost effective than others?
Well, if you think about, so the strip is a paper strip, immunoassay, it's a dollar a piece. It tells you yes, no. It detects some other analogs, but it doesn't tell you. So if carfentanil, it will pick it up.
Carfentanil is very strong.
Is even stronger. Like you said, it's an elephant tranquilizer. So you can imagine the potency to put an elephant to sleep of a narcotic. And so it only says yes, no. It's a dollar. The Bruker, which is a lot more sophisticated in what it tells you and needs an expert to use, it's not is to be able to test the drugs, and it's not, it's a little bit, it's $20,000 about. So that's why it would be more likely be one in a fixed site accessible to people who use drugs.
And it needs someone to operate it.
It needs someone to operate it because you need to be able to read the readouts. I'm not trained in that, and I can't necessarily read the readouts.
So focusing on the strips, how accurate are they? Your report mentions false negatives.
So we actually found that the strips were incredibly accurate in the two labs in terms of sensitivity. So we tested 104 positive samples. We found in Baltimore that it 100% of the time found that the drug was present when it actually was. We used the gold standard of what the police lab uses in the Rhode Island State Lab. And in Baltimore, we found that it was 96% of the time able to detect there's no fentanyl presence. And in Rhode Island, it was 98% of the time sensitive and 90% of the time specific. So it was a little bit lower, but those are pretty good numbers to be able to trust. Look, no instrument says, just like when you use diagnostic testing for any disease, you usually have to do further testing, or it just gives you an indication with some degree of error. I would take the 100% finding that actually the strip tells you that fentanyl is present.
You mentioned a few minutes ago some cities that make drug test strips available as part of a syringe exchange program. Baynard Woods wrote a piece for the Baltimore Beat last week about people using test strips to check their drugs. I got the impression they were from out of town. Are they available?
So the person, Tino, who was interviewed with a local peer advocate, Will Miller, that were highlighted in that story, Tino's from New York. He's administered these test strips, and he came to Baltimore just to talk about them. They are not yet available en masse, although I've been in conversations with the state of Maryland about how this could work. And, of course, there are legal considerations that need to be looked at. These, in fact, are drug paraphernalia. In Washington, D.C., the city council just voted on to actually make them exempt from drug paraphernalia laws there. So that's something that could happen in Maryland, but they're yet to be scaled up and available en masse. We're actually hoping to start a study where we distribute and understand the nature of if people use them themselves, if we give them out, what kind of counseling we need, we find that is useful for people. But hopefully this will be implemented to scale at the public health level because, you know, these numbers just aren't going down. You're going to have more people talk about this epidemic. They haven't gone down this year, like you cited the numbers last year. Overdoses have gone up in the first 9 months. overdoses related to fentanyl have gone up. And so we really need new evidence-based solutions at this chapter in the epidemic.
Well, drug checking is part of a family of approaches known as harm reduction. What else does that include?
So just to say thank you, harm reduction is really creating the possibility for people to reduce the greatest harm in an environment that is harmful. So it's really about reducing the harm of the drugs and not penalizing individuals or not looking at individuals as blaming them for whatever situation they're in. Harm reduction realizes that people use drugs, good or bad, and you need to provide opportunities like syringe services programs to help reduce the harms associated with it. And so syringe services programs like the Baltimore City Health Department's needle exchange in Baltimore had a huge impact in reducing the burden of HIV and hepatitis C among people that inject drugs. And so another, you and I talked a few months ago, last year, about safe consumption spaces, which is another kind of model that's being used in Vancouver. There is an underground, unsanctioned safe consumption space somewhere in the U.S. that's been written about that has been shown to reduce overdose.
This is a place where people can consume.
Sorry, a place
with
where
supervision,
people can
with medical yes. help nearby.
Yes. Previously purchased drugs. No drugs are purchased on the premises. No drugs are shared on the premises, and a medical provider is supervising people injecting. And they're located again all over the world, just like drug checking is.
So, if testing is not easily available on the street,
yet.
What are drug users doing in the absence of drug checking?
That's a great question. And, you know, just to say that we interviewed 335 people in these three cities, and people are interested in drug checking. 90% of people said that if they had known, they believed that if they knew fentanyl were present in their drugs, that it would help them make decisions and reduce overdose. So what are people doing? People are making sure that there are other people around when they use drugs. People are having extra doses of naloxone. The color is different. It's whiter. The color of the solution, the drug solution, is different when fentanyl is present. So people are more aware from the color or the rush, what happens when they inject. So a lot of people are using kind of a tester shot, using a small amount. I think it's really important to say on the record that, you know, people who use drugs do not want to kill themselves every day when they inject drugs. It's addiction is something that, you know, they're opioid receptors are lit up. If you're a coffee caffeine drinker, you know what it feels like in the morning when you don't have your coffee. So it's much, much worse when you don't have heroin because you have these receptors that are waiting to receive your drug. So it's important to say, of course, people who use drugs, some of them might seek fentanyl. We found that 75% of people do not seek fentanyl when they're using drugs. And some drug markets, not necessarily Baltimore, are saturated and there really is little heroin. A lot of people say that's true here, that there is little heroin.
We need to take a quick break here on the record. We're speaking with Professor Susan Sherman of the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health about research on methods for drug users to test the substance they're planning to use for the powerful and deadly opioid fentanyl. When we come back, I'll ask her more about what they learned from the drug users they surveyed. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us.
Listening to this segment
Welcome
of On the
Record,
Record with
I'm Sheila
Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your
fentanyl
NPR news station. And you can support On
the
Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click
Often
the donate
users
link
are unaware
at the top
that fentanyl
of WYPR.org.
Has been added to the drugs they
and thanks.
Buy, and it takes only a tiny amount to cause an overdose. A new study by the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health surveyed drug users. 70% said said knowing that their drugs contain fentanyl would change how they use drugs. Susan Sherman is a professor in the Department of Behavior.
Health, Behavior, and Society.
Health. I missed the health.
That's okay.
Department of Health, Behavior, and Society. She's co-author of a new study out today on tools that allow drug users to test what they are planning to take. It holds the promise of preventing them from unknowingly ingesting fentanyl. But I want to pick up on a point you made a minute ago about that 75% of the drug addicts whom you surveyed, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say addicts, the drug users you surveyed, said that they were not seeking fentanyl. And obviously that's a clear majority, but that means one out of four are seeking fentanyl. That's kind of scary.
Well, you know, it's important to note that tolerance can be developed just like for heroin. Tolerance can be developed for fentanyl. So that doesn't It might be people who, and this is something we need to look at, people who've used drugs longer, so they potentially would have a higher tolerance. And like I said, it's a different high, people have explained to me. It's a high, and, you know, I haven't tried either substance, but it's you feel it in your head. It's a stronger rush. So some people might like that. I mean, I hate to use roller coasters. Some people like crazy roller coasters with lots of turns, and then they walk off. And other people like less crazy roller coasters, you know, that maybe go high and have one dip. I mean, I understand that we're not talking about a roller coaster, although they can be dangerous. We're talking about drugs that people can consume. But so, yes, some people, I mean, it's just the reality that some people may take that chance, or, you know, those are the people who might also be extra precautious, but they like the high. So it's important for, I understand you're picking up on that, and it's important to look at, think of that with caveats that we've yet to be able to analyze.
Some of our listeners, I imagine, are listening to our conversation and are dying for me to push back. Encouraging people to bring drugs onto a site or providing a tool that may encourage someone to decide, yes, my drugs are safe to use, that seems like not a useful thing for public entities to be doing.
Right.
To some people.
No, of course. So it's good that you mentioned that, because, of course, people think that. And, you know, it's like if you think back to the early 1990s when arguments were happening around syringe exchange programs and you're handing out needles for people to use substances that are illegal, that and by using a syringe, they actually could become infected with HIV, of course, not when the market is flooded with clean syringes. And so I understand that people, you know, this hits for a lot of people's stigma around people who use drugs and kind of their notion of that's not right. But the reality is, for thousands of years, people have used drugs, and they likely will continue to use drugs. And so harm reduction is an approach that meet people where they are and treat them with respect, and with these testing strips, for example, or with a syringe exchange program, you are treating people hopefully kindly, and you're engaging with people about something that probably has brought them a lot of pain in their life. They've lost family and friends, and it's the beginning of a conversation, and it's recognizing where they are, and sometimes that can go in other places. You understand what I'm saying? So the strips are an opportunity to engage with people about what's really happening in their life, and maybe they'll engage with you more. Maybe they'll get a referral to drug treatment. Maybe they'll ask for other services, to talk to a counselor. We found that when we asked people who use drugs where they'd be comfortable using testing modalities, it was syringe exchange programs. Drug treatment was one of the more popular responses. Also health organizations and health departments. So people are interested in testing their drugs in placing where they engage with service providers.
We have just a minute left. What recommendation do you want people most to focus on?
Thanks for that question, that we need to really focus on these types of evidence-based interventions that deal with the reality that there are many people who are not yet ready to quit drugs, and we'd like to keep them alive and healthy long enough to make decisions like going into drug treatment when good drug treatment is available. So I think that the moral of the story is we actually have tools in our toolbox that we're not employing at a public health level, and hopefully these kinds of conversations can help us increase the opportunity for us to employ things like testing strips.
Susan Sherman, thanks for sharing your research with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Susan Sherman is a professor in the Department of Health Behavior and Society at Johns Hopkins. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we will link to the forecast report on drug checking, as well as to Susan Sherman's previous work on safe consumption spaces. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.